we trust that the authorities in Japan and the governments who are taking back people will be able to follow up those individuals in the appropriate way.
That as passengers on a quarantine cruise ship in Japan disembark. This is Thursday, February 20th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, China pulls the credentials of three reporters for a U.S. newspaper. The U.S. presidential selection process stops in Las Vegas. And can the newest member in that presidential debate buy his way to the top office in this country? All on today's VOA Asia. Hundreds of passengers began leaving the cruise ship that's been quarantined for 2 weeks at a Japanese port in an attempt to curb the spread of the new coronavirus that has claimed the lives of over 2,000 people in mainland China. Some 500 relieved passengers were expected to disembark the Diamond Princess Wednesday at Yokohama, where it's been docked since its arrival on February 3rd. Japanese health officials placed the ship and its 3,700 passengers and crew under quarantine after a passenger who disembarked in Hong Kong was diagnosed with COVID-19. That's what it's now being called, the virus. But the attempt to contain the spread of the disease backfired as 542 people became infected, making it the largest cluster of confirmed cases outside of China. Only those passengers who've tested negative for the virus and have not shown any symptoms were permitted to disembark the Diamond Princess. Some 300 Americans were evacuated Monday and immediately placed in another 14-day quarantine. Several other governments, including Britain, Canada, Australia, and Hong Kong, are also making plans to evacuate their citizens from Yokohama. As the number of coronavirus cases continues to rise, representatives of the World Health Organization and other experts emphasize that the importance of data shared by affected countries to minimize the impact and help prevent the virus's spread. VOA's Julie Tabo has more on that.
China has now reported more than 72,000 cases of the coronavirus, including more than 1,800 deaths.
At the moment, we don't have enough data on cases outside China to make a meaningful comparison on the severity of disease or the case fatality rate. We're following up with countries to get more information about what happens about each case and the outcome.
The WHO Director General said it's crucial for impacted countries to be transparent and share information with the World Health Organization so it can help.
This signals show the importance of all countries being ready for the arrival of the virus, to treat patients with dignity and compassion, to protect health workers, and to prevent onward transmission.
Professor Eileen Marty says the reaction by some governments has been inconsistent.
Some governments have been more strict, some less. Some have imposed trade barriers, some have imposed travel barriers, and the degree of those barriers different by the different places and their own capacities.
Regarding the spread of the virus on the docked Japanese Diamond Princess cruise ship, Michael Ryan, executive director of the WHO Health Emergency Program, says there have been more transmissions than expected.
It's an unfortunate event occurring on the ship, and we trust that the authorities in Japan and the governments who are taking back people will be able to follow up those individuals in the appropriate way to ensure that they get the appropriate care if there are cases, and if not, that they are reintegrated into their communities.
And while vaccine development is important, experts say it's not necessarily a top priority at the moment.
We all want to invest in the vaccine as a long-term solution, but there are people sick now, and there are health systems that are vulnerable now. So we need to balance our investments and invest in the weaker health systems, on our own systems, and then we do the other things and we develop the vaccine.
We have to make sure that that vaccine doesn't hurt you. So safety studies, and that takes time. That takes at least a month or 3 months to put people, to have volunteers use that and see people are even exposed and see if they have any risk.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
Chinese state-run media said Tuesday President Xi Jinping spoke to the British Prime Minister Boris Johnson by telephone, telling him that China's measures to fight the virus are making visible progress. Despite the recent drop in the daily number of confirmed cases, the World Health Organization cautioned people against relaxing and believing that the worst is over. The WHO said it's still too early to predict exactly which way the outbreak will go. Russia said starting Thursday it would ban all Chinese from entering its territory. Southeast Asia's most populous country, Indonesia, has not had an incidence of coronavirus infection, despite being at the crossroads of global trade and with some of its region's top tourist destinations. But the virus scare is having an impact on many parts of the country, including the popular tourist destination of Bali. The coronavirus outbreak has led to trip cancellations, but has also led many Chinese still on the island to apply to extend their vacations there. VOA's Ahadian Utama has more.
In Bali, Indonesia, many visitors from China are requesting extensions to their tourist visas following the coronavirus outbreak in mainland China. They feel safer on the island, long a popular vacation destination for foreigners in Indonesia's sprawling archipelago.
The condition there in China is worrying, and I don't want to go home yet.
Actually, I want to go back, but the coronavirus outbreak and all the flights are being cancelled. We can't go home.
In the past week, immigration officers at Bali's international airport have processed visa extensions for more than 300 Chinese tourists. Since February 5th, the Indonesian government has suspended all direct flights from and to mainland China to prevent the introduction of the coronavirus, now named COVID-19, by the World Health Organization.
All flights from Bali to mainland China or the other way around have been cancelled or suspended. This is a total of 247 flights on the weekly suspended. There are exceptions for flights from Hong Kong and Taipei or Taiwan.
Because of the suspension, on February 8th, the Chinese government organized the repatriation of 61 of its citizens who did want to go back. The Indonesian government claims there are no cases of COVID-19 infections in Bali nor the rest of Indonesia. But there were media reports of a Chinese citizen who was infected with the virus after visiting Bali, prompting an immediate investigation.
After deliberation and analysis, examining the incubation period and the visitor's itinerary from China to Bali, the period has passed. Most likely, the patient got the virus in China. If the patient got infected in China, then came to Bali, by now, there should be someone in Bali that got infected. But there have been no such infections.
China remains the second largest source of foreign tourists to Bali. Of the more than 6 million visitors who visited the island in 2019, more than 1 million come from China. The coronavirus scare and resulting flight suspensions is expected to hit Bali's tourism industry hard. The Bali Tourism Agency notes that in the past month alone, at least 20,000 Chinese tourists canceled their visit.
The decline of visitors, obviously it impacts the flights. Two or travel agencies, third our guides, hotels and destination sites, also souvenir shops which are frequently visited.
But officials remain optimistic. This isn't the first time Bali, known as the Island of the Gods, has faced the downturn in tourism. Visitors noticeably stayed away during the SARS scare in the early 2000s, the Bali nightclub bombings in 2002, and the subsequent terror attacks in 2005. They believe it will take time, but tourists will come back. For producer Ahadian Utama in Bali, Indonesia, Virginia Gunawan, VOA News.
These are among the top Asia headlines you'll find right now at voanews.com. Two North Korean defectors set up their own political party and entered the race for South Korean parliamentary elections. The North-South Unification Party said it was formed to give a voice to North Korean defectors in South Korea. Cambodia's government has announced a crackdown on female online sellers who dress what they call too sexily, prompting criticism from human rights organizations who say the move discriminates against women. The Sri Lanka's Prime Minister said Wednesday that the government has decided to withdraw from co-sponsorship of the 2015 Human Rights Council resolution calling for the investigation of allegations of war crimes committed during the island's nation's so long civil war. VOA Asia continues. Beijing has taken action against several journalists for what appeared in a U.S. newspaper. Charles de Ledesma has the story.
China says it's revoked the press credentials of three reporters for the Wall Street Journal over a headline for an opinion column deemed by the government to be racist and slanderous. The contested headline refers to the current virus outbreak in China, calling the country the real sick man of Asia. Now, a foreign ministry spokesman says the February 3 op-ed by Bard College professor Walter Russell Mead smears the efforts of the Chinese government and people on fighting the virus epidemic. The statement explains the expulsions come after the journal refused demands to make an official apology and hold the persons involved accountable. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The journal has identified the three staffers as Deputy Bureau Chief Josh Chin and reporter Chow Deng, both U.S. nationals, and reporter Philip Nguyen, an Australian. All three have 5 days to leave China. Another Wall Street Journal reporter, Chun Han Wang, was effectively expelled last year after he wrote an article about a relative of President Xi Jinping. The U.S. State Department condemned China's actions. Mature, responsible countries understand that a free press reports facts and expresses opinions. The correct response is to present counterarguments, not restrict a speech, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said in a statement. Wall Street Journal publisher William Lewis said in a press release Wednesday the publication was deeply disappointed over China's expulsion of the journalist in response to the opinion piece published on February 3rd. Lewis said the editorial was published independently from the Wall Street Journal newsroom, noting we enforce a complete separation between our news and opinion departments. Lewis said the publication regrets the opinion piece has clearly caused upset and concern amongst the Chinese people, but that the expulsions hinder efforts to fulfill the need for quality, trusted news reporting from China. The Foreign Correspondents Club of China voiced deep concern and strong condemnation over China's revocation of the three visas, declaring it is an extreme and obvious attempt by the Chinese authorities to intimidate foreign news organizations by taking retribution against their China-based correspondents. Wednesday's decision to expel the reporters comes one day after the Trump administration announced it would treat five Chinese state-run media outlets, including Xinhua News Agency and China Global Television Network, the same as foreign embassies, requiring them to register their employees and U.S. properties with the State Department. Happening now in Asia, nearly a year after he was bailed out of jail while facing corruption charges, former South Korean President Lee Myung-bak was taken back into custody Wednesday after an appeals court sentenced him to a lengthier prison term of 17 years over bribery, embezzlement, and other convictions. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Turning our attention to U.S. politics, six Democratic candidates have gathered in the state of Nevada for the ninth debate in the race to be the party's nominee to oppose President Donald Trump in November's general election. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders and former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg enter the debate fresh off two strong performances in Iowa and New Hampshire, the first two states to make their selections in the nominating contest. Minnesota Senator Amy Klobuchar is looking to ride momentum from a surprise third-place finish in New Hampshire into the debate in Saturday's caucus in Nevada. Vice President Joe Biden and Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren are eyeing the debate in Saturday's voting as a chance to recapture the support that made them strong contenders in earlier national polls. Now, former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg, a late addition to the contest, will be on the debate stage for the first time Wednesday after surging in the national polls while spending hundreds of millions of dollars of his own money on his campaign. Candidates are seeking to appeal to a more diverse demographic in Nevada after competing in two overwhelmingly white states. AP reporter Shelley Adler has the story.
Billionaire Mike Bloomberg will try to make the case tonight that he's the best candidate to beat Donald Trump. Chris Galdieri is an associate professor at the Department of Politics at St. Anselm College. He's wondering if the former New York City mayor will be out of practice.
He was a candidate for mayor in 2009. That's well over a decade ago at this point. And he'll be on a stage with a bunch of people who have been debating each other since last summer. So I think it's quite possible that he'll be rusty.
So what does Bloomberg have to do? That question put to Jeffrey Berry, a political science professor at Tufts University.
More than anything else, he has to convey a sense that he's presidential, that he could be the president of the United States. People have to look at him and say, yeah, I could see him in the Oval Office.
Shelley Adler, Washington.
Candidates in Nevada are competing for the votes of 200,000 union members. As VOA's Carolyn Pursuti reports from Las Vegas, securing union backing is more challenging than in previous election years.
U.S. labor unions historically have played a powerful role in politics. At their peak, 21 million workers were unionized nationwide. Decades ago, getting organized labor's endorsement could almost guarantee a candidate's victory. That's still true here in Nevada, home to casinos and the still powerful Culinary Union, with 60,000 members. The union has endorsed numerous candidates in its 84 years, but not now. Instead, choosing to promote labor's priorities and goals, rather than rallying behind a single candidate in the primary.
We're going to endorse our goals, what we're doing. That's what we're going to endorse. Are you ready for me?
Deirdre Felgar worked for years in a union job. She wishes that everyone would join forces to support one Democrat to defeat President Donald Trump in November.
Many voices speak louder than one.
Anyone who eats at the Fremont Hotel and Casino might see longtime Culinary Union member Jason Miranda, who works in kitchen supplies. He says he didn't wait for his union's endorsement to vote in the caucuses.
Main issues, probably health care, protect our health care.
While the Culinary Union didn't endorse, it did warn members that Senator Bernie Sanders' government-funded Medicare for All would end union-negotiated private health insurance. Again, Miranda is unfazed.
I think Bernie Sanders is a very decent man.
Gary Bauman has been a member of the taxi union for more than 40 years. He voted early for the candidate he believes most likely to defeat Trump.
Pretty split between Joe Biden and Amy Klobuchar.
Bauman bought a house from his taxi earnings, but says that would be impossible today as organized labor's clout has waned.
They're going to have bartenders that are machines and a lot of other things like that. So there's going to be a big fight here.
Analysts say the candidate most likely to be hurt by no union endorsement is former Vice President Joe Biden. Biden, with his longtime ties to unions, is in need of a win after weak showings in Iowa and New Hampshire. Carolyn Pursuti, VOA News, Las Vegas, Nevada.
Stay with us. We'll have more on how the former New York City mayor is spending his money. Lots of money. This is VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
Now this news from VOA Asia. Former Australian Prime Minister Tony Abbott has said the top levels of the Malaysian government long suspected at the disappearance of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 almost 6 years ago was a mass murder-suicide by the pilot. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. VOA Asia continues. After skipping the first two presidential primary contests, billionaire and former New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg will be on the election debate stage for the first time Wednesday night in Las Vegas. Bloomberg has already spent hundreds of millions of dollars on political ads on TV, radio, and social media, raising his name recognition and poll numbers enough to qualify for the debate. VOA's Steve Reddish has more on Bloomberg's spending strategy.
He's been a leader throughout the country for the past 12 years, Mr. Michael Bloomberg.
Former President Barack Obama has not endorsed any candidate to be the next U.S. president, but with this TV ad, Michael Bloomberg is implying Obama supports him.
At a time when Washington is divided.
To try to win the Democratic nomination for president, Bloomberg is inundating American media with an unprecedented ad blitz.
Has already run more ads than some of the general election candidates in the entire process from 2016.
The former New York City mayor and business news titan has spent more than $300 million so far on advertising. And he plans to spend $300 million more ahead of the March 3rd Super Tuesday primary elections. It represents less than 1% of his estimated $60 billion fortune.
You can't ignore that type of spending power.
Pizza should be very thin crust.
By one count, Bloomberg has produced 185 different ads on topics ranging from gun violence to pizza and how to eat it.
With your fingers, too.
I've watched his ads. They're good ads. Like, there are other candidates who have tons of money and spend it, and they spend it stupidly. He doesn't seem to be spending it stupidly. He seems to be spending it smartly.
Bloomberg's ad blitz has vaulted him into third place in the Real Clear Politics polling average of Democratic presidential candidates.
On the economy.
While Bloomberg floods TV, radio, and social media with issue ads and endorsements, he has not attacked Democrats. Instead, Bloomberg targets only President Donald Trump with dozens of slickly produced videos, often using the president's words against him.
We'll create up to 500,000 American jobs.
Bloomberg vows to continue his ad campaign against President Trump, even if he does not win the Democratic Party's nomination for president. Steve Reddish, VOA News, Washington.
This news break from VOA Asia, India is buying drones and specialist equipment to monitor the movement of locusts and spray insecticides to ward off a new outbreak that could ravage crops. That according to government officials. Earlier, Indian authorities were able to bring swarms of desert locusts under control, but an outbreak in neighboring Pakistan has raised new concerns. Now on VOA Asia, as some of the negative effects of life lived online become more apparent, digital wellness groups are promoting ways to maintain healthy lifestyles. Deanna Mitchell has more.
Many people spend much of their waking hours looking at screens, and that has spawned a growing health sector called digital wellness.
We live in this age of the attention economy, and this notion really asserts that our attention is the most precious resource.
Hersher is a social worker and the CEO of the Digital Wellness Collective, a trade association dedicated to finding the best use of technology for mental, emotional, and physical health. For Hersher, the fight against screen time is personal. Struggling with a stutter as a child, she relied on eye contact to let people know she was trying to communicate.
I saw a massive shift in eye contact and in presence as mobile phones and as texting became more prevalent. And I made it my personal and professional mission to really see why this shift was happening and how we could take back our presence.
One organization in the collective, America Offline, offers a device-free camping experience for teenagers. It was started by a youth basketball coach frustrated with what he saw as lack of team unity due to screen time. Life spent online is generating new maladies. One of them is nomophobia, which is the fear of being without one's phone. You can get tech neck from holding the head at a 45-degree angle, and email apnea happens when holding your breath while reading emails.
If your dopamine high is based on superficial clicks of likes that are constantly changing, then it can be very detrimental.
It's enough to make one want to do a digital detox, and some are trying.
Looking at my phone while I was nursing my new baby and then looking at my baby and thinking, why am I looking at my phone? It was really at that day I decided to use my phone a lot less.
Hersher said going completely offline is unrealistic for most people. She hopes to help people find the optimal use of tech for their well-being. For VOA News, Dina Mitchell, Scotts Valley, California.
Thank you for being with us on VOA Asia. And our thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Kelvin Fowler. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a great day.